Okay, those meeting minutes are approved. So with that, we will start with the Open Office of Open Government report. Director Nikhil Allen.
Good afternoon, Chairperson Hutchison and members of the board. I am Nikhil Allen, Director of the Office of Open Government, and I am pleased to report this, to present this report on the activities of the OOG. Since the last board meeting, the OOG has continued to fulfill its mission of ensuring that all persons receive full and complete information regarding the affairs of the district government and the actions of those who represent them. I'd like to start by reporting on our Open Meetings Act and Freedom of Information Act advice. Since the last board meeting, the OOG has not issued any advisory opinions. With respect to informal OMA FOIA advice, since the last board meeting, the OOG has provided responses to requests for formal and informal advice and responded to requests for technical advice concerning the use of the OOG's website for OMA compliance. These requests were sent to the OOG via telephone or email, and the responses were not shared with the public in the form of an advisory opinion. The OOG provided 14 responses for informal advice regarding FOIA and 13 for informal advice regarding the Open Meetings Act. The OOG also provided 28 responses to OMA requests for technical assistance, which included separate instances of targeted support, including the creation of new accounts, setting up passwords, and assistance with the central meeting calendar. The next item is the OMA FOIA audits. The OOG is continuing its comprehensive FOIA and OMA audit. The audit will be complete on or before August 1st, 2019, and we will report the results prior to the end of the fiscal year. Attorney Barton is handling the OMA audit, and I'm handling the FOIA audit. With respect to the FOIA audit, the OOG's reviews of independent agencies' websites is complete, and we will forward letters to the independent agencies with website compliance issues on or before July 12, 2019, which is tomorrow.
I'm just curious, when you're doing the audit for FOIA compliance on the websites, what kinds of things are you looking for?
We're looking for the 2-536 requirements. That's the information that we made public. We just want to make sure that it's there. We're looking to make sure that it's current. And where it's not, we're advising OCTO or the independent agencies where they need to make corrections before the end of the fiscal year. So we will check again to make sure that they've made those corrections. Next, training and outreach. I completed the Maximizing Your Leadership Potential training course at the Center for Creative Leadership in Greensboro, North Carolina from June 12th to 14th, 2019. The purpose of this intensive training is to increase your leadership skills by increasing your ability to understand others, motivate others, and meet the needs of diverse teams. I would like to take this opportunity to thank Chairperson Hutchison, Director Wolfenbarger, and members of the staff for providing feedback on my performance. I found it very helpful. I appreciate you taking time out of your busy schedule to help me become a better leader. Director Wolfenbarger recommended the training to me, and I found it to be extremely useful in my professional and personal life. On a personal note, my mother was retired from the Center for Creative Leadership faculty and was a feedback coach, so it was especially rewarding for me to connect with her friends and colleagues.
Did you get your group photo?
I did. It was a great time, and I had a great group of folks from all over the country. So I highly recommend it.
So for my fellow board members here, I did that training as well when I was the director sitting in Brent's chair. And it is probably, it is internationally known as one of the best leadership training programs you can take. I mean, folks were there from academia, corporate, international, military, all there to take these trainings. So it's not cheap, but it is worth every penny. And so congratulations.
Congratulations. I also had an opportunity to take it several years ago, but it's very extensive and comprehensive, so. Good for you.
Yes, I got a good workout, actually, mentally. The next item, OOG will hold OMA training sessions on Thursday, July 25th, 2019 from 10 a.m. to 12 p.m. and Thursday, August 8th, 2019 from 10 a.m. to 12 p.m. These sessions will include instruction regarding the OMA and the new OOG regulations. The target audience for these training sessions are the agency's point of contact for boards and commissions. The next item, I will be a featured instructor at the American Society of Access Professionals Incorporated 12th Annual National Training Conference in Arlington, Virginia, which is taking place July 22nd through 24th at the Renaissance Capitol View Hotel. I will be a presenter for the course State and Local Freedom of Information at 8 a.m. on Monday, July 22nd. Next, the OOG published its biannual newsletter on Friday, July 5th. The newsletter discussed the latest issues concerning FOIA and OMA, details important information concerning transparency, profiles of new Vega members, and spotlights the high-performing public body, which is the Bicycle Advisory Commission. The newsletter is available on open-dc.gov under the Documents tab, and the document is also provided in the Vega Dropbox for your review. The next item is a legislative update. OOG's rulemaking. On June 21st, the OOG sent a memorandum to the administrative points of contact for the District of Columbia boards and commissions to inform them of recent changes to the OOG's regulations concerning open meetings. The memorandum summarized the rulemaking by noting the significant changes to the existing rules and recommended best practices. This document is also in the Vega Dropbox for your review. Next is a joint public hearing regarding public charter schools. On June 26, 2019, the Committee of the Whole and the Committee of Education held a joint public hearing at the DC Council on Bill 23-239, the School-Based Budgeting and Transparency Amendment Act of 2019. The stated purpose of the bill is to establish an electronic reporting system for all local education agencies and public school budget expenditures to collect comparable data from public schools and LEAs. The bill subjects the Board of Trustees of public charter schools to the Open Meeting Act. The OOG did not provide public comment on the matter, but did monitor the hearing. The OOG's only concern is that if the bill passes, it will increase the OOG's workload, and the DC Council should provide Vega with additional budgetary funds to handle this increase should the bill pass.
And you know how many of those boards there are, the Board of Trustees? Approximate? More than one? Less than?
It's a significant number. Each charter school in the District of Columbia is essentially a corporation of itself.
It has its own board of trustees.
Yes.
So we essentially now all of a sudden have oversight over all the charter schools.
That's
which
right.
is what we wanted for a long time. But as you say, we need to be staffed up in order to do that.
Yes, absolutely.
Okay.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Next is litigation. On June 24, 2019, in Food Marketing Institute versus Argus Leader Media, the Supreme Court of the United States held that where commercial or financial information is both customarily and actually treated as private by its owner and provided to a government under an assurance of privacy, the information is confidential within the meaning of the Federal Freedom of Information Act, Exemption 4. The Supreme Court ruled 6-3 to reverse and remand the Eighth Circuit's decision in this case in an opinion by Justice Gorsuch. I think I said that right.
Gorsuch. I mean, that's a sea change in the law. I mean,
yes,
right? What is the temperature in the open government community on this?
Well, the open government community, of course, is not happy about this ruling because it allows the government to retain information and essentially puts the burden on allows the corporation or entity that provides the information to kind of set the standard as to what is confidential and what's not confidential.
So the standard before was actual harm to the entity.
That's right.
And now it's shifted to a presumption that if it's traditionally private, then it gets to remain private.
That's correct. That's correct.
That's a big change.
It is. In the district, we are looking to see how it affects us. We do not think it does because our law essentially codified the former standard that was rejected by the Supreme Court, but it's DC law. And the underlying case, it was a South Dakota newspaper who ask for information from the Department of Agriculture regarding food stamp revenue totals for participating grocery stores. As you know, the Department of Agriculture administers a supplemental nutrition program and maintains records concerning the dollar amounts paid to retailers participating in the program. So again, the lower court found that the records were not exempt, but now they are cannot be made available to the public. And this opinion is in the Dropbox for your review as well. The last item is the hearing room upgrade. We are working with Octo DCNet to purchase upgraded Cisco equipment for the hearing room. We are determining whether to integrate the equipment now with our existing AV equipment or wait until we begin the full upgrade project in the next fiscal year. The current Cisco equipment is operational, but if it breaks down, it will not be supported. So again, we're making that decision cost-wise, whether it makes more sense to integrate it and then take it out and reintegrate it versus just holding it until the complete project. And I'll keep you posted on the progress. Okay. This concludes the open government report for July 11th. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Director Allen. Next, we'll hear from the Director of the Office of Government Ethics, Mr. Waffenberger. Please proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This is an update on the status of the Office of Government Ethics operation, a recap of the previous month's activities. These reported statistics do not reflect status changes that we anticipate will occur as a result of actions taken by the Board during today's meeting. Open investigations by status. We have 17 investigations that are open and active. We have two investigations that are open at the show cause hearing stage. We have one investigation that is open in negotiations. We have one case that is open for the board with a notice of violation hearing upcoming for a grand total of 21 open investigations. Pending state investigations by status, we have 14 cases that are closed pending collection. We have one investigation closed pending an appeal to the DC Court of Appeals. We have two investigations that are closed pending external action, which are primarily respondents completing their required ethics trainings. We have two that are stayed pending Office of the Attorney General False Claims Act cases, six that are stayed pending OIG investigations, and five that are stayed in U.S. District Court cases for a grand total of 31 investigations that are pending or stayed. Regulatory matters by status, we have 23 that are closed pending collection, one that is open on the appeal to the director, and one that is open on a board appeal for a grand total of 26 regulatory matters. Current investigations that are open, as I indicated earlier, there are 21, which is equal to the same number reported last month, and a decrease of two from the 23 reported in May. Investigations that are stayed or inactive, currently there are 14, which is a decrease of one from last month of 15, and that figure was 15 in May as well. Publication and reporting obligations. We submitted our financial disclosure statement file report to the DC Register as required on June 17, 2019. We are also in the process of completing the quarterly complaint report, QCR, for the third quarter of fiscal year 19, and we'll publish it to our website when it is completed. Training and outreach, professional development trainings attended by staff. Investigator Corrales, Investigator Cook, Attorney Stuart Mitchell, and Attorney King attended one training webinar on five steps to create a culture of ethics, compliance, and accountability that was conducted by EyeSight. Investigator Bradley completed a training webinar on myth and realities of cell site coverage areas presented by Hawk Analytics on June 27, 2019. That training covered records and best practices for mapping and analyzing cell site location information, in-depth presentation about cell site coverage areas, and records generated from cell site locations. And our administrative officer, Sandra Peterson, attended the Performance Management Symposium on June 13th. And lastly, I have continued my leadership development efforts with the Center for Creative Leadership, including executive coaching calls with the trainer I partnered with at the CCL training program last August, and that's been very helpful for me. Ethics trainings conducted by staff. Since the date of the last meeting, we conducted or participated in 10 trainings, which is six more than the four we conducted last month. The 10 trainings included two monthly ethics trainings, four full ethics trainings at the Commission on Arts and Humanities, the Public Service Commission, the Department of Four Hire Vehicles, and the Department of Forensic Sciences. 3 new employee orientations and an ethics overview conducted by attorneys Cooks and Stuart Mitchell for the Academy of Public Administration of Kazakhstan. In addition, 116 employees, district employees, took the online training through PeopleSoft between May 1st and June 18th, including our new auditor, Emmanuel Tajuba. Ethics Day 2019. Last year, BEGA held its annual Ethics Day on October 4th here at One Judiciary Square. Based on the large number of attendees and the positive reviews, the event was a huge success. This year, OGE is proposing that the board host an Ethics Day similar to last year's event on Thursday, October 3rd, 2019. We will begin preparing a draft proposal of courses in preparation for next month's board meeting, and we welcome any suggestion that the board may have to offer. Newsletter. The July edition of Ethically Speaking, the BEGA/OGE newsletter, was published on July 10th. We decided to hold off on asking the mayor's office to distribute this month's newsletter to all DC government employees because they are only willing to let us do that one time before requiring employees to opt in to receive our newsletters moving forward. Instead, we will take advantage of that one-time opportunity for an upcoming month's newsletter once the agenda for Ethics Day is finalized so we can spread the word about that event to as broad of an audience as possible. Advisory opinions, advice. Informal advice. We issued approximately 59 informal advice opinions, which is 23 less than the 82 reported at the last meeting. This number does not include responses we have provided to questions regarding the lobbyist and FDSE filing systems. Formal advice requests. We issued 1 safe harbor letter upon the request of a district employee, which subsequently will be published in the DC Register once we learn if the employee wants his name redacted from the letter. Ethics legislation, comprehensive code of conduct. Nothing new to report on this front. Chairman Allen has introduced this year's version of the CCC for the council's consideration, and Councilmember Brian Nadeau introduced another bill on March 19th entitled the Ethics Reform Amendment Act of 2019. We look forward to working with Chairman Allen, Councilmember Nadeau, and their respective staffs to advance these legislative efforts in furtherance of our agency's mission.
Can I ask about the safe harbor opinion you issued? Is it just the subject of it?
The subject of it was whether it appeared that the new chancellor, Louis Farabee, had attempted to engage
gotcha.
In any.
Gotcha. Thanks.
Rulemaking. During last month's meeting, the board formally approved the proposed rulemaking that was published in the DC Register on April 26, 2019. The final rulemaking will be submitted this week for inclusion in the next DC Register in accordance with legal and procedural requirements. Budget. Our fiscal year 19 budget currently looks to be in good shape. With less than 3 months remaining in the fiscal year, our local funds currently have an available balance of 35% of our appropriation, while our OTIP funds currently have an available balance of 80% of our appropriation. Our staff members are actively enrolling in training programs they believe are well suited for their individual needs and career goals, and I am working with DGS, OCP, and the Office of the Secretary on several projects to take advantage of our available funding between now and September 30th. Because the Mayor's Office and the Committee on the Judiciary and Public Safety did not provide funding for our number one fiscal year 20 budget enhancement request, an allocation to cover the rent for new office space that is adequate for our needs, we shifted our focus to use our existing space as effectively as possible in the interim. On June 13th, we received a proposed new layout for the bullpen and information regarding furniture options, but the plan called for 12 employees to be jammed into that space, which I thought would be too crowded. On June 25th, Ms. Peterson and I had a follow-up meeting to review the proposed layout, and we subsequently asked that the layout be modified to allow for 8 workstations rather than 12, and we actually received that revised layout earlier this morning. We are also awaiting estimates regarding the anticipated cost to better soundproof our existing conference room / interview room on the 8th floor, as well as the 2 offices that adjoin the space occupied by DSLBD. And I did print out some designs that we received this morning.
How many folks do we have in there right now?
5.
And we're going to go to 8?
We're going to go to 8.
And they were thinking about 12?
They were trying to put 12 in, and I just don't think that was realistic.
I thought 5 was crowded, actually.
The new design calls for 3 L-shaped cubicles for the 3 investigators, and then a smaller workspace near the door coming in from the main entrance, and then a panel of 4 workstations kind of in the middle of the room. And there'll be sufficient clearance for, you know, handicapped access. I think it will work in the interim anyway. Lastly, a contract was awarded on June 21st to a staffing agency called Abstract Evolutions to provide us with an experienced application developer to help implement needed enhancements in our FDS and lobbyist e-filing systems. Sandra and I met with the agency's leadership team on June 27th to discuss our project in greater detail. I had a follow-up phone call with the agency on July 10th, at which time they provided me with a PowerPoint to explain their proposed approach to addressing our needs, which I found very helpful and consistent with my experience in the private sector working on software development projects. I have reached out to Octo to schedule a 4-way meeting or conference call next week involving Vega, Octo, Abstract Evolutions, and DataNet, the vendor of our old e-filing systems, to discuss a number of interrelated issues, including 1, moving forward to complete the still unfinished data migration project that was required under our original MOU with Octo, and B, integrating the team from Abstract Evolutions into the effort to improve the stability and functionality of the new e-filing systems through developing and implementing these needed enhancements. Staffing. I would like to introduce you to our new auditor, Emmanuel Tajuba.
Welcome.
Thank you.
He joined us on June 10th. Emmanuel has an MBA in professional accounting and is a certified public accountant or CPA with more than 15 years of experience in public accounting, financial reporting, internal audits, and internal control procedures. He has quickly become a very valuable member of our team, and he has taken the lead on a project to develop more robust and well-designed procedures for our FDS and lobbying audits.
Welcome aboard.
Thank you. DCHR's recruitment for our new program specialist position that will help manage our lobbyist and FDS programs closed on Friday, July 5th. This is the role Caleb Smith most recently filled through a temporary staffing agency. DCHR is currently vetting the 29 applications, and we are waiting for them to send us a list of highly qualified candidates from which we will begin scheduling interviews as soon as possible. Back in April, we secured the services of Joseph Thomas as a temporary tech support specialist to handle customer service requests related to our lobbyist and FDS e-filing systems. Joe continued working in that capacity through the month of June to help wrap up outstanding support tickets, and he will remain on board through at least July to provide assistance during the current quarterly lobbyist reporting season. We submitted the updated position description for our general counsel position to DCHR on June 28, making some minor modifications at that agency's request. DCHR has approved the PD, and it should be posted within the next few days and remain open for applications for 3 weeks. Lastly, I'm working to schedule a retreat involving the board, OGE, and OOG, most likely in late August or September, to give us time to fill the GC position so that person can participate in it. I've been planning for a 2-day event where I envision the first day being dedicated to long-term strategic planning, with the board, both directors, the GC, and the board senior attorney collaborating at a high level during the first half of the day, followed in the afternoon by a series of sessions involving both directors, the GC, the board senior attorney, and line staff from both offices designed to flesh out the high-level plans that emerge from the morning sessions. The board members would not be expected to participate in those afternoon sessions, although you would certainly be welcome to do so if your schedules permitted you to do so. Likewise, the second day is expected to be dedicated to personal assessments and team-building exercises involving the leadership and staff from both offices. I'd greatly appreciate it if you could let us know at some point in the next week or so what dates in August and September you could be available to participate in this retreat, and also if you have any suggestions regarding potential locations, as I am still exploring available options.
Why don't you suggest some dates and we'll say if we're available.
Okay.
I'm going to say we, you mean the board or?
Well, if he suggests the dates for us, then mm-hmm. at least have some to choose from.
Okay.
I do this every day now, and it tends to work better that way than just okay. asking when people are available.
Okay.
Makes sense. Litigation, status of pending cases. Garen Price, CA number 16-AA12-1230. This case was submitted on October 24th, 2018, and we are still awaiting the court's decision. Second matter is A. Blaine versus Vega, OEA matter number J-0030-19. This is an employment matter involving a separated employee. We submitted our draft response to OAG, which they filed on our behalf before our April 12th deadline. The administrative law judge issued an order requiring the employee to submit a legal brief establishing OEA's jurisdiction by April 26th. As of May 3rd, the employee had not responded, and on May 3rd, the ALJ issued an order requiring the employee to both submit to submit both her brief and a statement of good cause for failing to file the brief timely no later than May 16th. The employee submitted a brief on May 8th, 2019, simply stating, "I'm sorry for submitting my brief late," and the OAG filed a response on our behalf on May 21st, 2019. We are now waiting for a decision from the administrative judge, and there's been no update as of this week.
So her apology constitutes good cause in her opinion?
I would not think so, but apparently that does her position. Larry Hicks, next matter, case number 2017-CA-008091. This was an enforcement or collection action filed to collect a $20,000 fine imposed on Mr. Hicks. On May 28th, OAG informed us that Mr. Hicks contacted them and agreed to a payment plan. Under the plan, he should complete payment of his fines by September of 2021. OAG has provided us with a copy of the settlement agreement, but as of July 9th, they were still waiting to receive a signed copy from Mr. Hicks. Lobbyist financial disclosure matters. This year, there are approximately 3,815 designated filers, and so far, about 3,295 designated filers have filed the form via our e-filing system, which constitutes an 86.37% compliance rate. We still have 200 public FDS non-filers from last year, along with the 534 current non-filers from this year. 112 of this year's non-filers were ANC commissioners in 2018, some of whom were re-elected and are still serving in that capacity in 2019. Another 66 non-filers are newly elected ANC commissioners who were required to file because they were candidates for election in 2018, while another 57 non-filers are DCPS employees. The ANC commissioners, both returning and newly elected, constitute exactly one-third of all current non-filers, and combined with DCPS employees constitute 44% of all non-filers. We have formulated a strategy for 2018 and 2019 FDS enforcement. In addition to reviewing the FDS support tickets we received after Okta created that admin tool in June 2018, we plan to cross-reference the emails of all OGE staff who worked on FDS matters the past 2 years with our non-filer list so that we will not send fine notifications to anyone who reached out to us for help with technical problems related to the new e-filing system. Tiffany Montgomery is assisting us with this project. After completing that phase, we will continue working to help those who experienced technical problems to access the system and submit their FDS statements while planning to send fine notifications to the remaining non-filers from both 2018 and 2019. As you may know, we must file 3 reports with the DC Register in connection with the FDS program on or before June 15th each year. Number 1, a list of all public filers. Number 2, a list of all filers who sought and received an extension and the reason for the extension. And 3, a list of those who have not yet filed a report and the reason for the failure to file. We submitted those reports to the DC Register on Monday, June 17th, 2019, and the reports were published on Friday, June 28th, 2019. Lobbyist filing waiver requests. Pursuant to DC Official Code Section 1-1162.32 subsection C, the Ethics Board may waive the penalty imposed for untimely filing of a lobbyist activity report for good cause shown. Case number 19-0017-R, Holland and Knight. The firm requested waiver of late fees imposed for 2019 registration reports and activity reports due to difficulties navigating the new e-filing system. OGE did not oppose this request as long as the firm pays a $300 civil penalty previously imposed against it in case number 15-0022-R within 30 days for which we had no record of ever receiving payment. The board previously tabled this request to allow the staff to further investigate whether a payment had been paid for the previous penalty. Holland and Knight responded to our inquiry and indicated that they would send us a check for the $300 penalty previously imposed in case number 15-0022R. However, Tyrell has been out of the office the past 3 days, and I have not been able to touch base with them to find out if we've actually received the check or not. So I'd ask the board to just table this request for another month until we can find out and confirm that we've actually received the payment. Non-confidential investigations. First matter is case number 18-0006P, N. Ray Jack Evans. This formal investigation involves allegations that council member Evans violated the council code of conduct. We are working with our partner agencies to ensure that any investigative actions we undertake will not interfere with the related law enforcement investigation. Next matter is case number 19-0003-F, N. Ray Kenneth Crosswhite. This is a formal investigation based on allegations that former Deputy Chief Kenneth Crosswhite violated the district's nepotism rule by entering and approving overtime for his son. PHMS issued a final agency decision in which it found that Mr. Crosswhite violated the nepotism rule, and Mr. Crosswhite has appealed that decision to OEA. The board approved a notice of violation at the last board meeting, and Mr. Crosswhite has filed his answer to the notice of violation. We ask that the board issue a hearing date for this matter. The board senior attorney is working with the parties and the board to schedule a date for the adversarial hearing. Case number, the third one is case number 19-0008-F, N. Ray Dr. Marla Weish Hall. The board authorized a formal investigation and the issuance of subpoenas in this matter, and we are waiting to receive responsive documents before deciding upon next steps. It's my understanding we actually received those documents this morning. And that concludes my report.
Okay. Any questions? Any other questions? Thank you, Mr. Wolfenberger. And with that, we'll open the mic up for public comments. Commenters are reminded to keep their remarks to 3 minutes or less. Are there any public commenters?
There are, Madam Chair. Mr. Sindrum.
Okay, Mr. Sindrum, if you could hold on, please. There's someone else who's going to speak ahead of you. You want to come forward? And if you could use the microphone so we can all hear you. Would you introduce yourself, please?
My name is Valerie Jablow. In June 2018, I submitted a complaint to VEGA about a possible unregistered lobbying organization, PAVE, which is paid staff who recruit parents to lobby elected officials on education matters, including budgets. In April 2019, after a preliminary investigation, VEGA's Brent Wolfenbarger issued a decision that PAVE is not an unregistered lobbying group. The preliminary investigation interviewed PAVE staff along with council staff and members they met with. Last month, I presented Mr. Wolfenbarger evidence suggesting this preliminary investigation is insufficient. PAVE staff and council members and staff they met with have a vested interest in the outcome of this investigation, so their statements are inherently self-interested. The statute defines lobbying as communicating with officials to influence legislative actions. The budget is a legislative action. The statute also notes that registration is needed if lobbying directly benefits your organization. PAVE is funded by charter supporting organizations, one of which is CityBridge Foundation, which helped plan 5 charter schools just approved in DC. PAVE also advised in the application of a new charter school, Learn DC, and PAVE's executive director is its board chair. In addition, PAVE has characterized itself as an organization of charter parents. Those donor organizations thus benefit from PAVE's work. There is no way to know whether parents who PAVE organized would have been at the Wilson Building without PAVE, which makes it materially different than individual parents like me or a PTA showing up to talk with elected officials. In addition, PAVE provides transport and childcare for parents it organizes, accompanies them to meetings, and hosts breakfasts and lunches with council. PAVE staff meet with parents to formulate advocacy, but limit the choices that parents have to determine what they will lobby for. What results is not a representative or independent collection of parental action or thinking. Finally, at least one other organization does something like what PAVE does, Jews United for Justice. Unlike PAVE, Jews United for Justice is a registered lobbying group. I am thus here to ask that you support further investigation of PAVE as an unregistered lobbying group. Thank you.
Do you have any response now? You want to take this under advisement?
I'll be happy to respond.
Our staff fully investigated the allegations. They contacted and interviewed the witnesses involved. And the key crux of the investigation was determining whether staff members or employees of PAVE were actually engaging in communications with council members or agency personnel that would constitute lobbying activities under the definition of the statute. And it was determined that while they scheduled meetings, they did not actually communicate with the government officials during those meetings. Instead, the parents themselves were the ones that were communicating. Every witness we interviewed confirmed that this was the case. The fact that they may be self-interested is no different than any other investigation. The subject of investigation is always going to have an interest in it. The question is whether the testimony they give is deemed by our staff to be credible and reliable. And in this instance, the investigator and the attorney who conducted those interviews felt that the witnesses were being forthcoming and concluded that the agency, under our rules, would not need to be registered as a lobbyist. And the information that Ms. Jablow provided us was, in my opinion, more argument than evidence, explaining why the you know, PAVE had an interest in the results of the investigation. But like I said, that's the case in any investigation, and we stand behind the results of our investigation.
So is it your position that there was no communication within the meaning of the definition of communication in the statute?
Correct.
And that's because the communication itself was only about scheduling rather than the substance of the lobbying?
Correct.
Any other questions or comments from board members?
Question. Is this basically similar to, I mean, I know it's pretty well known here in this town, especially trade associations have fly-ins to allow their, to facilitate their members being able to meet and interact with members of Congress, et cetera. This is at the local level, the council. Is this akin to a trade association or an interested group organizing its members to come in and facilitate their ability to meet with their elected officials?
It's my understanding that they function in that latter capacity. And it's the fact that the staff of PAVE are not making those communications, having those arguments, you know, trying to advocate for a particular position. That's what separates them from a lobbyist who schedules a meeting, brings in clients, and then the lobbyist engages in the communications while the association's members are more there for support. It's the exact reverse in that, according to all the witnesses we interviewed, PAVE does the organizing of the meetings, but doesn't actually present arguments or try to persuade.
Okay. So in order for PAVE to be on the hook here, the statute would need to be changed, it sounds like, in order to make a would-be lobbyist part of the process at any point along the way, whether it's to arrange a meeting or be at the meeting or to speak during the meeting.
They would have to broaden the definition of lobbying activities.
Okay. Maybe that's the answer here.
Okay. Any other comments, questions?
Can I speak? I don't want to interrupt.
I'll give you a few seconds.
I just wanted to know why people with an interest in the outcome were the only people who were asked about this. There was no attempt to find analogous organizations like Jews United for Justice. There was no attempt to find out what the financial interest of this organization has in this investigation. It accrues to their benefit that the outcome is that they are not a lobbying organization. It costs money to register. It limits their flexibility with government agencies. It gives them the appearance of being a grassroots organization, much like my PTA, say, going in to the council. But it's materially different.
I think Mr. Waffenberg has already explained that it's the nature of their activities once they're there. As opposed to anything they may do to actually set up the meetings in advance. And so if I'm not mistaken, I think he's addressed your concern. At least the legal analysis has been provided.
Madam Chair, I just want to thank the citizen for coming. I know it's not necessarily convenient or easy to come in the middle of your day, and we appreciate public comment. You have a sincerely held concern, and it's well respected here at the board, and thank you for your time and attention.
Okay.
Mr. Sidrum, you have 3 minutes or less.
You know, Ms. Allen, I'm tired of your disrespect and abuse. You did it not accost the previous speaker. You're not going to do it to me. I've seen him come, and I've seen him go, and your clock doesn't work. Stop it. If you have a bad day, go home and put your slippers on and kick the dog. Don't vent your frustration and anger out on me. I'm not the enemy. I'm a disabled veteran who has served our country more than most. Moreover, if it looks like a duck, acts like a duck, quacks like a duck, it is a duck. The previous speaker indicated it's lobbyists, and indeed they are. It is the veteran. It is the veteran, not the preacher, who has given us freedom of religion. It is the veteran, not the reporter, who has given us freedom of the press. It is the veteran, not the poet, who has given us freedom of speech. It is the veteran, not the campaign organizer, or you, Miss Allen, who has given us freedom to assemble. It is the veteran, not the lawyer, who has given us the right to a fair trial. It is the veteran, not the politician, or you, Miss Allen, who has given us the right to vote. It is the veteran who salutes the flag, who serves under the flag. God bless America and our troops. I trust I won't have to say this again, because next time I'm going to put some paper on you, and I'll see you in federal court under 42 United States Code, Section 1983, deprivation of my civil rights. I'm sick and tired of being sick and tired, and you're not going to keep using me as your doormat, your punching bag. Plain and simple. You've got a bad day, once again, go home, put your slippers on, and kick the dog. You did a little better today with the time clock, not interrupting and interfering with me. Don't do it again. You don't do it to anybody else. See ya. Glad I ain't got to be ya. You need to go. You're fired.
Are you done? You have 15 seconds.
No, you're gone. You got less than 15 seconds. You're gone. You're fired.
Okay, we're done.
You're disrespectful and abusive.
Oh, okay, Mr. Sidrum, you're done. Okay, with that, we're going to... The next agenda item is closed session to discuss ongoing confidential investigations pursuant to D.C. Official Code Section 2-575B to consult with an attorney to obtain legal advice and to preserve the attorney-client privilege between an attorney and a public body pursuant to D.C. Official Code Section 2-575B4A. To discuss personal matters including the appointment, employment, assignment, promotion, performance evaluation, compensation, discipline, demotion, removal, or resignation of government appointees, employees, or officials pursuant to D.C. Official Code Section 2-575B10, and to deliberate on a decision in which the Ethics Board will exercise quasi-judicial functions pursuant to D.C. Official Code Section 2-575B13. And I'd like to have a motion to enter into executive session.
I'll make that motion.
Is there a second?
Second.
Any discussion? The hearing none, it's been moved and seconded that the board enter into executive session. All those in favor, please indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? The motion passes. Thank you.